You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to The Political Fix on this Wednesday, August the 20th. Wow, can't believe we've actually been going about 3 months on this show. We're nearing the end of the summer. Time just flies. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me are my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay's a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he's also the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their businesses into the U.S. He also has a development lab that creates smartphone apps and inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and internet marketer with a degree in philosophy. He's developed a political movement, let's say, that he calls The Solution. Now, The Solution is to cap and prioritize government spending, and he will talk about that more throughout the show. I'm Heather Vail. I'm a journalist in all media known as The Unwrapper. Hey, guys, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. How was your week? Jay, do you have any exciting things to share with us? Any wild and crazy stuff? Jay doesn't have anything to share. Okay, that's unusual. That's very unusual. Rick, how about you? What did you do this week?
Nothing special. Went out to a group that tries to teach people about natural law. And, of course, based on my work, I have a more complete version of what they're trying to teach, I believe, and so that was kind of a fun conversation. But just working hard on building the next round of the movement's efforts.
Okay, cool. Jay, are you back?
I believe I am back. Am I back?
I hear you now. So, how was your week? You got any crazy stories for us or anything?
I do not have any crazy stories, or any that I'm willing to tell. I have been plugging away. We got a big project we're working on here, trying to bring here to Nevada. And the bigger project apparently is me trying to get back on the Hangout, which apparently is happening as we speak. Also, for those of you on the Hangout, I've been fooling around with the lighting in my office. I came on earlier today. I looked like I was daily. Yeah, it was a little spooky in here.
Yeah, your audio's breaking up now, too, so.
Might be.
Gotta love technology, right? At least this isn't a tech show, because if this was a tech show, then we would have to be totally on top of it, even though, you know, it's not our fault. Technology is what it is. We're doing our best, but. So, I guess.
Okay.
All right. We kind of don't really hear you very well. I don't know if Doug wants to reconnect you again on the radio.
I think we should reconnect him by a phone. Can we do that? Is Doug listening?
Doug, you want to reconnect Jay by phone? And while we're doing that, maybe Rick, you could explain to us a little bit more about The Solution and what it is.
Okay, The Solution is called Cap and Prioritize. And the easiest way to think about this is that the cap is about making sure the government spends a little bit less than it would otherwise. And the prioritizing is about helping government spend a little bit better than it would otherwise. So really, cap and prioritize is all about spend less, spend better. Spend less, spend better. So I want you to imagine a whole convention full of people, and half the crowd is chanting spend less. And the other half is chanting spend better. And that's what the solution's all about. Now, the way it actually happens, the details, you know, we need to argue about. We need to figure out what kind of caps we need and how do we do the prioritizing. But at a high level, it's very simple, cap and prioritize. The political right will like the caps, and the political left will like how the transparency of a prioritized budget forces government to help people who need help most and help them in ways that actually get results, so results matter. And the political center will like the combination. because it's a gentle transition from the mess we have now into a fiscally conservative, socially progressive government that just makes sense. So there's something here for the right, the left, and the center, and that's why it's ultimately going to happen, because as soon as more people hear about this and understand it, it will have intrinsic political viability.
Okay, when you say the mess we have now, what do you see as being wrong with what's going on now?
Well, first of all, compared to the rest of the world, we're actually doing pretty well. Okay, so let's put that in perspective. I mean, there are some countries, especially some smaller countries, that are making some better decisions. But, you know, every country is messed up in their own unique ways, and we're no exception. So, people on the political left, right, and center, they're going to have different feelings for how government's messed up. People on the political right are going to think that government spending is out of control and that, therefore, taxes also are out of control and that the spending is not spent very wisely. They're going to think that the government's overregulating things. And people on the political left are going to think that, they're going to agree that it's not being spent wisely, but they might disagree on the limits. They might think that the rich people have enough money to share more. So there's some disagreements there. And the political center, a lot of people are just fed up with the whole left and right bickering that goes on. And so they're tired of all the negative attack and all this. You know, there's serious people discussing serious issues seriously, and they're not seeing that. And not even on TV when they attempt it does it actually happen. It's all sound bites now. It's not a serious discussion.
And you think the left-right bickering will stop magically if cap and prioritize is implemented?
Well, it's kind of like racism. Okay, we still have examples of racism, and the events of the last week kind of prove that it's still there. That there's a lot of tension, racial tension, certainly. But compare that to a generation ago, 2 generations ago, 3 generations ago, the trend is positive over generations, and so it may never go away completely, but it'll get better and better and better over time. And so, I think the left-right divide that exists right now is one of those kinds of divides that eventually we'll make progress on it. Thanks to cap and prioritize, we will make the government as limited as the right wants, and within those limits, we'll make it as good at helping people as the left wants. And we'll still be arguing, but we'll be arguing about maybe something else, or we'll be arguing about smaller and smaller details within a constantly improving system.
Okay, so we get to just kind of transfer the argument to something else. Well, at least it's something.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as we start, arguing about really small stuff, then we know that we've succeeded. So we're still in an era of arguing about some pretty big stuff. You know, things like abortion/right to life, things like gun rights, things like marriage equality. You know, these are some pretty fundamental issues of freedom and fairness. And so we're still arguing about some really big issues. I think that I'm going to predict that in the next 50 years, most of these big issues will have largely been solved, at least in theory, and we'll start to see tremendous progress in solving them in reality in some countries, and that over the next 100 years, we'll start to see more of a global acceptance of whatever answers we end up moving towards.
Okay. That is not necessarily related to cap and prioritize, though, correct? I mean, I don't see the correlation between capping and prioritizing and solving the argument on abortion or gay marriage.
Well, you see, some problems have to be solved before we can honestly discuss other problems.
Okay.
An example is that people who are in favor of abortion rights or are against it, or pro-life, we think of one party being all for it and one party being all against it or whatever, but the truth is a lot of people have mixed feelings. They vote Republican because of fiscal issues, but they kind of wish Republicans believe this other thing regarding abortion, pro-life, and vice versa. So I think as soon as we solve the fiscal divide that we have, which is really dominating our left-right divide right now, then we can kind of re-pivot ourselves. We can re-divide ourselves on whatever the next big issue is. And I'm not sure what that'll be. It'd be an international issue, like the Islamic terrorists might come to power in enough countries with nuclear weapons that that becomes a dominant issue, Russia could or China could emerge as a superpower in a bad way or a good way that might change the international scene. So there's a lot of issues in the next 50 years that could become to dominate. But right now, the left and right are divided largely on fiscal issues.
Yeah, okay. Jay, are you back on?
I believe I'm back on. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I'll put a slightly finer point on it. Heather, you had mentioned the abortion issue. Here's how it gets solved, is that once cap and prioritize is an issue, it becomes the norm. Abortion, pro-choice, pro-life is no longer an issue in the public square because government will have nothing to do with it. It'll remain legal. End of story. Government won't be funding it.
No, but there are people. I disagree completely.
You think government should be funding it?
You think it'll become illegal?
No, legal. It'll remain legal.
Well, I'm asking Rick because Rick says he disagrees with you.
Oh.
I don't know what's going to happen. And my point is that what we all really believe is not knowable right now because our views are colored by the left-right divide in other issues. And so as soon as that becomes the issue that divides our nation, then we'll know where everyone stands. And I believe that another factor that's going to happen over the next couple of decades, too, is advancements in technology are going to so change the picture that it may even be a moot point by that time. We may just absolutely have the ability to prevent conception, for example, at will. And then the few unwanted pregnancies that do happen, maybe that's within the capacity for us to have adoption, absorb that population, and then that's not even an issue. So I don't know what's going to happen legality wise, but my claim is that I don't think Jay is right in saying that it will absolutely be legal. I don't know.
We're losing Jay again. Jay, we can't hear. I'm sure that you're saying something profound, but we can't hear what it is, unfortunately.
Well, this is what Jay said, and I'll say I disagree with him. I completely disagree. He's wrong. I don't know why yet, because I haven't heard him, but I'm just sure of it. maybe we should go to a commercial break, and then we can talk to Doug and Jay back on the phone in a different way.
Yeah, all right. That's what we're going to do. So we'll be back with you in a few minutes. We'll have the top story and a lot more coming up on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail here with Rick Raddatz, and yes, Jay Amernick is back as well. We have his audio. We can hear him. Jay, prove it. Let's hear something.
Yes, here I am.
Yay.
Proving that I'm
all right. So before the break, you were trying to say something about the abortion debate and cap and prioritize, and Rick disagrees with you. However, he doesn't know what you said because we didn't actually hear you. He just is assuming that he's going to disagree with you. So maybe you could tell us what you did say.
My point is that the compromise will be that it will remain legal, but that government will not be paying for it.
So it's therefore not political issue anymore. It's just a social issue.
Right, which has then nothing to do with government.
Right. Okay.
And I disagree.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before. I'll go into a little different twist on this here. Part of my work on capitalism is the deeper philosophy of rights and individual rights and so on. And I think when people start to understand and prioritize and how it relates to our collective resources and our collective rights and how cap and trade relates to future resources and therefore the future's rights, and we can start to see how capitalism is about private individuals and private resources and individual rights. We're going to have, as a population here, a much deeper, more precise, perfect understanding of all the different players, all the different levels, and all the different rights that are involved. And I think when that happens, that's going to shift the debate. And we're going to say, you know what, the future generations do have rights, both in terms to not having a polluted world, having enough gas and copper to go around, but also a future person, an unborn baby, has rights. Darn it. I think that's where we're going to end up. But it's not going to be the big social issue it is right now, because I believe technology, again, is going to also come along in parallel and help reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies so that it's less of an issue, enough so that it just is actually made illegal to abort, but there's enough capacity then for adoption. That's my prediction.
Okay, so well, you're predicting sort of a different technology and everything like that coming forth.
Yep. Yeah, technology advance and also philosophy advance as well.
Okay. I'm not in the prediction business, so. If I could accurately predict the future, I'd say let's all go over to the Green Valley Ranch sports book with our life savings.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. But okay, and you know, even if that's the case, even if Rick is correct, there is still going to be debate and argument around how the technology is used and whether technology is moral and whether it's even okay to use contraceptives at all, because you know that's another part of the debate going on. So, we could spend 12 shows talking about this, and we're not really going to get anywhere. So.
Right.
So what's the top story, Heather?
All right. So the top story, you guys were talking before the show about this story and Jay saying it's not a national story. However, it is actually a national story because it took place on non-national soil, but all the players, the main players in this are primarily American. So
that's why I'm not in the prediction business.
That's why you're not in the prediction business yet, case in point. All right. So, in a gruesome act of revenge for U.S. airstrikes in northern Iraq, militants with the Islamic State extremist group have beheaded American journalist James Foley and are threatening to kill another hostage, according to U.S. officials. Now the White House has to weigh the risks of aggressively attempting to destroy the Islamic State against resisting any action that could result in the death of another American. It will also confront the possibility of pursuing the Islamic State in Syria, where President Barack Obama has resisted launching airstrikes or using significant American firepower up until now. U.S. officials confirmed that the grisly video that was released yesterday did show Islamic State militants beheading Foley. Foley's family also confirmed his death in a statement posted on the Facebook page that was originally created to advocate for his release. And they said on that page that they have never been prouder of him. 40-year-old Foley from Rochester, New Hampshire, went missing in northern Syria in November 2012 while freelancing for Agence France-Presse and the Boston-based media company Global Post. The car he was riding in was stopped by four militants in a contested battle zone that both Sunni rebel fighters and government forces were trying to control, and he hasn't been heard from since. The beheading marks the first time that the Islamic State has killed an American citizen since the Syrian conflict broke out in March of 2011. The group is the heir apparent of the militancy known as Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which beheaded many of its victims, including American businessman Nicholas Berg in 2004. The video released on websites yesterday begins with scenes of Obama explaining his decision to order airstrikes. And at the end of the video, a militant shows a second man who was identified as another American journalist, Stephen Sotloff, and warns that he could be the next captive killed. Sotloff was kidnapped near the Syrian-Turkish border last August. Since August 8th of this year, the U.S. military has struck at least 70 Islamic State targets, including security checkpoints, vehicles, and weapon caches. Now, it's not clear how many militants have been killed in those strikes, but it's likely that some were. The Islamic State militant group is so ruthless in its attacks against all people they consider heretics or infidels that it's been disowned by Al-Qaeda's leaders. In seeking to impose its harsh interpretation of Islamic law in the lands it's trying to control, the extremists have slain soldiers and civilians alike and have mounted the decapitated heads of some of its victims on spikes. The New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists estimated yesterday that about 20 journalists are missing in Syria, but they didn't release what their nationalities are. So, there you have it, guys. Top story. Jay, thoughts?
Again, this underscores that this is, for all the, hippies, who think we need to sit down and form a drum circle and hug these people. Forget it. This is a battle of civilization versus barbarism and savagery, and it's time that we did something about it. That is the most hideous thing that I can imagine is to take a non-combatant and then to force him to say all these things and then chop off his head. It is ridiculous, and it's. I'm furious about the whole thing, and we need to do something. Too sweet, before it keeps happening, because pretty soon, if we don't take care of it there, we're going to be fighting it here.
Yeah. Okay. Rick, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree we have to do something, but not for this reason. I think that the Eastern. To his credit, himself in harm's way for something he believed in, knowing that this was a possibility, and ended up happening this way. So I don't believe we rush to war or go to war slowly, because of this. I think there's a whole lot of other good reasons, namely what Jay said, that these guys are a threat, they are dangerous, we've learned, I hope, from past history that you want to stop these things earlier. But I also want to point out that I have a pet peeve. This is like a little mini rant. I have a pet peeve with journalism, where in the effort to be fair, they're not accurate. And there's a subtle thing. But like right in the beginning of that story, I disagree from the first sentence that this was done in response to our airstrikes. They do this for their own reasons, and they do it anyway. They're finding an excuse.
Well, Rick, the reason why they say that is because at the beginning of the video, it was edited in with Obama making the statements about the upcoming airstrike. So it's a clear message that this is our response to that statement.
No. If the airstrikes didn't happen, they very likely would have gotten this guy or somebody else and killed him anyway for some other reason, and then they would have found whatever excuse they could have found to.
I'm the only one left.
Say it.
Jay, are you there? Are you back, Jay?
I'm on the phone, but I'm not on the
okay.
Hangout.
Okay, because I didn't hear. I lost Rick on the phone too.
You left me on the phone?
I can hear Rick on the phone.
Oh, he's back. Okay.
Okay. So where'd I get cut off?
You got cut off in the middle of arguing that even though they edited Obama talking about the airstrikes onto the beginning of the video with the implication that this is the result, cause and effect, you're saying, no, they would have beheaded him anyhow. But they've kept him for 2 years, so I don't think they would have just randomly beheaded him.
You don't think so?
No, it was a statement.
They were waiting for an opportune moment to maximize, the effect. And what they're looking for, quite frankly, are a bunch of useful idiots in the United States who are gonna get all hippy dippy about it, and say we should submit to this. That's what they're looking for.
Here, Jay, right.
They were
waiting for the opportune moment. This is part of their strategic plan. It's not in response to our action. It is they're taking advantage of our response to their action.
Yes.
Okay. So what are you talking about, the hippy-dippy response that they're looking for?
This nonsense about we need to sit down and talk to these people like they're an honest broker. They are an irregular army, and they should be treated as such. They don't follow
they want
conventions of being a combatant. They go by, they're not, of course, certainly not signatory to the Geneva Convention, and quite frankly, should be just, you know, this is halting the progress of CAP and Prioritize because it's a distraction from setting the world right.
Yeah, their goal is to get us debating whether or not it's really in response to American action. So that's almost the whole point of this video, is to get the hippy-dippy movement, as Jay calls it. I won't define it so precisely, but I'll say that journalism, in an attempt to be fair, plays into their hand here, where in no sense is this in response to our airstrike. In no sense. This is a tool that terrorists use, knowing that American journalists in particular, but journalists around the world, will try to be fair and not reveal their true intentions and their true mechanics. It's part of the game. I understand it. I wish that journalism would go one step deeper than it does in terms of in making it clear that this group claims it's in response to this, would be more precise and yet still fair. That's the way I wish it was phrased.
Yeah. Okay. So, Jay, you mentioned that this is a distraction to setting the world right, a distraction to implementing something like CAP and Prioritize. There's always going to be these types of distractions, as you call them. So what would be the solution to not having that interfere?
Well, you're always going to have, as you suggest, yes, you're always going to have some kind of interference. But this is, again, as I said before, this is a battle between civilization and savagery. I hate to be defending George W. Bush, but, you know, when he said either you're with us or you're with the terrorists, he was absolutely right. You either stand with civilization or you stand for that. There's no middle ground. There's no maybe. And this is, again, going back to Rick's point, what the journalist in their alleged attempt to be fair are trying to set right, because then the hippy dippies are going to say, oh well, maybe they have a point and you know, blah blah blah. But it's nonsense. It's pure nonsense. This is a battle for civilization. And we either
okay,
fight
so your
there,
solution your vote. Solution is to wipe
or,
them out.
It's to take them on militarily, because that's the only way.
Is it even possible to use regular military tactics against terrorists who use underground tactics?
That's a separate issue. Again, you know, then we.
I mean, I don't even know if you can. I don't even know if that's a fair battle. I mean, I don't know if you can even win a battle like that. That's like going onto a deserted island and trying to take on the savages on their own land. When you got no weapons, they've got all the weapons. Like,
unless you know what you're saying. Again, if this goes back to the art of war, you know, one of the challenges there is a lot of times the general fights the last war, right? So he uses all the lessons he learned in the last war, even though the next war may be completely different. So that's a challenge there, but that's a separate issue. I mean, none of us here are military tacticians, unless Rick is hiding something from us.
Well, you don't need to be a military tactician to know a few basic facts of warfare in this context, and that is, first, if a terrorist is hiding by staying in their house as a dad in a family with kids, then it's really hard to know where the terrorists are. And so people who go to the secret meetings and they believe certain things but kind of keep quiet, that's, you know, it's really hard to fight terrorism at that level. When they come out in force, like ISIS is now, that's when you actually can use a military approach and wipe out a whole bunch of people who believe this way and prevent the next generation from even getting started, because they know what happened last generation. So, and generally sooner the better. Now, that doesn't mean we lead the charge, and we should run to water. So, you know, the next action, that's where you do have to be a military strategist and the international diplomat to know what the best approach is given the reality of the world and the world stage. So I don't know what President Obama should do here, but I do know that now's the time for someone to take ISIS out, and it's probably going to have to be a coalition of the willing, and that's where if Obama has spent the last 7 years or 6 years, whatever it's been, building up our alliances instead of undermining them around the world, we would be in a better position now to make sure that this didn't happen. If he hadn't taken the military out of Iraq when he did, if he had found a way to stay in and ease the position more gradually, you know, some of these past decisions that he's made, I think, contribute to the mess we're in right now.
Okay. All right, well, let's take another break, and we're going to come back in a few minutes with Jay's inside perspective. We'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with Rick Raddatz and Jay Amernick, my co-hosts. Before the break, we were talking about the top story and a variety of different things. Now we're going to move on. We've got Jay's regular segment, which we call Inside Perspective, the reason being Jay Amernick has experience working in the government in certain capacities. So he brings a different perspective to the table than the rest of us. So, Jay, let's go ahead and talk about the inside perspective for today.
Okay, yes, and I will say this week is actually two things, and I know Rick doesn't want me to qualify it before I do it, but it's sort of a mini rant. And I also contradicted myself earlier in the show, but here it is. I have zero tolerance.
What? You're not allowed to contradict yourself. That's just no.
I'll qualify it once we get more into it. But here it is. I have zero tolerance for zero tolerance because I think it's one of the biggest obstacles to cap and prioritize. And I think once we get over those hurdles, you have on the right, they're going to say no taxes ever. We can't do any taxes. Get rid of the whole thing and get rid of the Fed and get rid of the whole thing. And on the left, their zero tolerance is going to be, you know, rich people shouldn't be rich and we need to take more of their money. So once we get past, and those are just some examples of zero tolerance, but once we get past that, then we can move into cap and prioritize. So it's going to be overcoming that, which I think is going to be the biggest obstacle.
I think zero tolerance is more like if you get caught driving with alcohol in your system.
Well, no, what zero tolerance means is it means we don't have to think, okay? And it means it's either black or it's white, one of the two. And then what happens is when it doesn't fall into black category, the right says forget it. If it doesn't fall into white category, the left says forget it. Instead of saying, you know, there are reasons and qualifications for this happening.
I know a lot of people who would consider themselves more left than right who do not think rich people should not have money.
That's just one example. So there are several examples of, and again, we could certainly go back to the abortion issue.
In fact, I know some rich people who would consider themselves more left than right. So, I mean, it's not an oxymoron.
If you talk to the Occupy Wall Street movement, their attitude is that the William Jennings Bryan thing where nobody ever made $1 million honestly and they need to have it taken away from them. Somehow they did it.
There's certain people that have that belief, yes, but I don't think we can blanketly
I'm saying that it exists on the left. I'm not saying that that everyone on the left believes that or everyone on the right believes. The tax thing. I'm saying that the people who maintain themselves as these hardcore ideologues, either on the left or on the right, maintain this zero tolerance position on a great many things, and that's going to be the biggest obstacle to cap and prioritize.
Okay, Rick, what do you think?
Okay, first of all, on that little debate between you two, you're Jay. Okay, because I don't think Jay said that the left believes this, He's saying the fringe element, the zero-tolerant element of the left, believes those kinds of things. And there's other
examples.
Well,
we can play back that audio clip, but I'm pretty sure he said the left believes, the right believes.
He may have been imprecise in one moment, but it was clear what he was trying to say, I think.
When I say that, what I mean is, what I usually mean is, there are those on the left, there are those on the right. And I just use that as an example.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm very sensitive to that kind of attack, Jay, because I get attacked that way all the time myself. Where, no, I wasn't saying that. You know, don't take my argument, which is attempting to be very precise, generalize it in some weird way, and then tell me the general case is wrong, so therefore I must be wrong. I mean, you know, that's what I get back all the time. And that is one of the challenges here in getting cap and prioritize spreading is that people are so sure that they're and yet wrong. Okay. And,
I'm still not hearing Rick. I'm hearing like every other word. Do you hear what he's saying clearly, Jay?
He's breaking up a little bit, but I get the gist.
The gist of I'm getting the gist, but it's like every other word's gone. All right, continue.
should we call in a cell phone here? Is that better?
Yeah, I think you should call in on your cell phone. I really do.
Okay, well, Jay, I'll call in.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so...
All right.
Jay...
Yes. I'm here. What?
All right. Well, I don't know what else to ask you about that. I mean, it's pretty... There's not a lot we can explore with this. Give me another example of where you have seen zero tolerance specifically that you didn't agree with.
I pretty much don't agree with zero tolerance across the board because what it means is we don't have to think. Okay, and I'll give you a great example unrelated to this, which is what you suggested before, the zero tolerance three strikes law, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever crimes you committed, boom, boom, boom. That's it. You're away and no looking at it. Okay, and yes. Okay, I would suggest that someone who has committed two crimes, let's assume they were both armed robbery, just for the sake of argument, and then the third one was like failure to pay a parking ticket, and then they're going to put them away for life for that. That's nuts, right? That
okay. Means, well, that's are you sure that that would be the case, or are they talking felony level here?
I believe that there are some states. Where, again, if you have, like, an overwhelming amount of, you know, parking tickets or something like that, or a traffic violation or whatever, that can qualify as your third strike.
Okay.
And when it's zero tolerance, it's goodbye. That means it's prison?
Is that what you're saying? It's prison?
Yes. And when we stop thinking, it becomes a huge, huge problem. And it's when we stop thinking, we stop listening. So, again, on the right, there are those on the right again who say no taxes, abolish the Fed, do all this stuff. So when you say to them the idea of prioritize, they're going to say no. The government shouldn't be spending money on anything. You know, there are those that are for privatizing roads, for privatizing the army. I mean, think about how incredibly dangerous that is. Mainly because they have stopped listening. They're not going to listen to any argument. And then there are issues on the left that are the same thing, where they will not listen to any argument because they have it in their head that this is rock solid, and that is it. It's the same argument, as opposed to being something that's negotiable. For them, it is saying you're literally telling them again, water is not wet.
Right, and you expect this to somehow change? I mean, this is what I keep bringing up week after week on this show.
I didn't offer a solution to it. I said that this is the biggest obstacle.
Okay,
I don't know.
But Rick has repeatedly said that when we implement cap and prioritize, these issues will dissipate. So, Rick, are you back?
I'm saying this is going to be one of the biggest obstacles in order to implement cap and prioritize.
And these are the types of obstacles I keep bringing up week after week, because people have their beliefs and they're not going to just drop them just because we're trying to implement a solution we could make an argument that it would be better for them, but...
Which is why my opening salvo was I have zero tolerance to zero tolerance.
Yeah. Rick, what do you think about what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think Jay is largely correct that this is one of the primary resistance points in spreading cap and prioritize. I think the way past it is to help those people who are thinking on the left, right, and center, to help them realize that this solution, cap and prioritize, does meet their needs, and they have to have confidence in it. And so we're going to start someplace local, maybe the state level, maybe in a foreign nation, before we do our federal level, probably. But it's one of those things where we have to win the power game before we can end the power game. And so we're going to start with the people who get it and then go from there. And I don't think one side or the other is going to get it fully. I think the right, it's a little bit easier for the right to get cap and prioritize because they've already understood the need for a cap and who's against prioritizing. Not many people, really. So the right gets cap and prioritize a little bit easier. The left has to understand how the whole thing works, how through competitive government spending, the best stuff wins and we end up pursuing social justice, thanks to the combination of the cap and the prioritizing. That's a more complicated message. And so it's a little bit harder for the left to really be confident in it. And yet a third of the testimonials I get are from the left. About half are from the right. I'm going to say it's about half from the right, 25% from the middle, 25% from the left is the testimonials I get back from my various web efforts on this. So the right gets it better, but the moderates and the left, they do still get it, just not in the same way.
Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vale. I'm here with my co-hosts, Rick Raddatz and Jay Amernick. And before the break, we were talking about Jay's Inside Perspective segment, which was about how he has zero tolerance for zero tolerance, as much as that makes no sense. Just kidding. I get it. All right. Rick, we're now going to move on to the segment that Jay's got the inside perspective. You've got the outside perspective, which we affectionately like to call Rick's rant. So go ahead and do your rant.
Okay. Today I was going to rant on what Jay ranted about, which is people not thinking, not, you know, people who are sticking to their own position. So I have to rant about something else now. So I'm going to rant about people who think humanity is not making progress. A lot of people on the left, right, and even the center, they see an increase in the amount of polarity in government and they sense an increase in our conflict, and they feel like we're not making progress, like we're going backwards in some way. We're getting closer to the edge. We're going to, kill the earth. We're going to kill our country. We're going to, whatever. And that is just clearly not the case. Because if you look at humanity over any length of time, the longer the time, the better, we are making progress. And at any point in time, it might seem like that group of people, that era is going backwards in some way. Like if you look at just before the Civil War in America, racial tensions and arguments about slavery and so on are getting more and more fervent, right? And so people just can't take it anymore. And yet that's part of the progress. You have to get that angry before you finally do something about it. So when times are getting worse, that's actually part of the process and finally fixing the root problem of that era. And then we make a giant leap forward, and then we figure it out again. And so we will solve these problems in America. We will solve these problems around the country, around the world. And then the world will finally be mature enough, once it learns to set limits on fiscal issues, to set limits on environmental issues. But we got to solve our fiscal issues first, cap and prioritize. Then we can spread that around and have a world more largely at peace, largely compatible philosophically. Then we can solve our environmental issues at a global level. Then humanity will finally be mature. That's where we're heading towards. It is absolutely towards progress.
Okay. Jay, what are your thoughts on Rick's rant?
Rick and I are agreeing more and more as the show progresses, mainly because he's had me tie everything into cap and prioritize, but everything's on point. I wish I could add to it.
You can't? You got nothing to add?
I have nothing to add. I have no anecdote. I have no finer point to put on it.
Do you want to talk about Rick's monkey that's on his shoulder?
I can't see it. I thought we were going to rant about the Google Hangout being a little.
Let's rant about the technology.
Jay asked me to tie in Google Hangouts crashing on them. And that would be an example of perception of a lack of progress. The things are going backwards. And, you know, you can't make a phone call on any of our networks anymore. And yet that actually is progress. We have more choices in the networks. We're choosing more flexibility for lack of reliability. But reliability will come back. So it's all part of progress.
And if Google Hangouts, doesn't get their act together and have it be more stable, some other company's going to come in and do it better.
The thing is, the reason why it's unstable is because so many people are using it. So that's just, that just supports the fact that it is progress, because people wouldn't have flocked to it so much if it wasn't offering them some kind of value.
They then need to either up their game and make it so that X amount of people can use it without it being unstable, or somebody else is going to come in and do it and figure out the technology.
And they'll probably charge an arm and a leg for it.
But it's the competition that makes progress. It keeps everybody from resting on their laurels. The more you rest on your laurels, the chances are you become America Online. At one point, that was the big deal, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's like, I still have an AOL email account that I've had for, 20 years probably. But at the end of the day, they're not what they once were, no matter how hard they try. They missed the boat. They rested on their laurels. They said we're the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and good luck everybody else catching up to us. Everybody caught up to them and surpassed them.
Yeah, of course. And their marketing was kind of weird from the beginning too. They were implying that it was a completely different experience from the internet, but it was part of the internet. So anyway, Google, however, is arguably the current 800-pound gorilla, and they've made some crappy products too, and they know, and they launched so many things that some of them that's just that didn't work. Let's get rid of that.
Right.
But Hangouts
Google Plus is an example of that. They may actually shut Google Plus down.
Right now, it's the foundation for Hangouts, so it's intricately tied in with Hangouts. As far as it being another Facebook, it never was that. I don't know if that was ever their intention. It didn't make it if it was. And then they also had Google Buzz, which was meant to be kind of like Twitter. That didn't fly either. So,
but
at least they're willing to adapt and change. So they say, okay, well, Google Plus didn't work for what we thought it might be, but Google Plus is working in this other instance to support Hangouts. So, and it does have tremendous SEO enhancements as well. So at least they're willing to adapt, whereas AOL did not adapt very well, in my opinion.
It has SEO strength mainly because it's when you look it up on Google. Oddly enough, Google likes Google.
But if
you look them up on another search engine, Google Plus doesn't show up. But nobody else is. I mean, Google really is that. Okay, so as far as the search engine goes, that's their strength. But as far as, whoever designed Google Plus, try going in to edit your profile. You have to search and press buttons and go back and forth. It's not very intuitive. It's clearly devised and designed by a total nerd who it makes sense to him, but it doesn't make sense to normal people. Which is exactly the opposite of Facebook,
and they made YouTube more complicated than it used to be as well.
By tying
it into Google Plus, so now now they're intricately tied together as well, and that is also complicated. But anyway, the point is that YouTube, Google Hangouts, a bunch of Google properties are being used by people because they do represent progress, and I like how they're willing to adapt and change as we go, which is what we have to expect people to do, as well when we're talking about implementing different political strategies. We're going to want people to be able to adapt and say, okay, yeah, let's try something new. Same way Google does.
Well, and to jump off of that point, we talked about how competition helps capitalism constantly improve products and services. And I'm going to argue that what cap and prioritize really is, it's a way of getting ideas for government spending to compete so that government spending can constantly improve in social justice. It really is the exact same structure. It's just applied to a different context. Capitalism makes individuals compete. Cap and prioritize makes ideas compete for government spending. Democracy makes politicians compete. Our national defense and diplomacy makes foreign nations compete for our attention. If we implement cap and trade at a global level, once the world is largely at peace, largely compatible philosophically, then everything will compete for resources in a more efficient way so that we can have sustainability. So it's all about making ambitious decision makers compete. That's what's good in the world. Everything else is unavoidable.
Nice. All right, that's a great way to wrap up the show. We are out of time. We'll be back with another exciting episode next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Check us out in the meantime at politicalfixradio.com. I'm Heather Vail, and on behalf of my co-hosts Rick Raddatz and Jay Amernick, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week on The Political Fix.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vail Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.